if it's good for us?
Like, if it will help us in Krishna consciousness, or if we really can help that child.
Help you in Krishna consciousness? Well, that doesn't exactly help you in Krishna consciousness. The problem is, if you don't have children, that may not help you in Krishna consciousness. You follow? In other words, it's better not to get married at all. Does marriage help you in Krishna consciousness? But if you don't get married, that really doesn't help you, generally. That becomes the problem. So therefore, it's better to enter into the Grihastha ashram, and then if one practices Krishna consciousness well as a Grihastha, that helps. Krishna consciousness helps you in Krishna consciousness. And the real thing is that what is the most favorable situation considering my psychophysical nature? So for someone, the best thing for them is to stay brahmachari. For someone, the best position for them to practice Krishna consciousness is in Grihastha ashram. Because if they don't get married, then they're going to make a mess out of their lives. So similarly, for children, generally means almost always, Grihastha life means children, because Grihastha life generally means some form of restricted sex life, and sex life means children. Then the other topic is that if one is actually very responsible, capable, and can organize his life in such a way so that the children actually become Krishna conscious, then that becomes very valuable, because children who are born of pure samskars, who are raised in a very pure life, become people who don't ask these kind of questions. These kind of questions come from us, who are always on the mental platform. But if they have good samskars, they won't be on the mental platform. So as a general practice, as a general principle, Grihastha life is good for your Krishna consciousness if you're a really serious practitioner of devotional service, and if you really dovetail Krishna consciousness in Krishna's service, and then both marriage and children can be a real asset. But it's like raising children. Raising children isn't bringing them into the world is the easy part. And then making sure that they actually don't have the same type of handicaps as we have, that requires some serious work. It doesn't happen just by chance. Otherwise, they'll become contaminated.
What if this seems too complicated, and the reason that you don't want children is because, like, some kind of selfish, because I don't want to complicate my life in this way. Is that okay, or?
I don't know if it's okay, because I don't know you that much, but it may be okay if it's natural for you, and if it enhances, facilitates service, it may be acceptable. In other words, it's not taboo. So although all women should generally get married, but Prabhupada didn't discourage those women who try to remain single, provided that they really had the facilities and Prabhupada trusted that they actually could do that. And then I have god sisters who are like that. So it's really very much an individual thing. Prabhupada wasn't against husband and wife just remaining husband and wife, provided that they're very strict in their vows, and then if that becomes something that's sort of natural to them, because you know having children isn't something you can do any time. It's like you know you can do many things at more or less different times of life, but you can't have children at any time of life, because it's very much it's a time-bound thing, it's a biological thing. So, and you don't want to start having, you know, people don't want to have children when they're 40 years old or 50 years old, because that's also not what Krishna consciousness is about, is when it's, you know, you're supposed to be beyond retiring time, and at that time you're taking care of children. And it also doesn't work beyond a certain age for women. So those things, therefore, self-realization means you also know your conditioned nature. And whereas we may have high expectations and real, you know, it may be good to shoot for the sky, but we should know what our abilities are and what our limits are. But ultimately, as any arrangement is okay in Krishna consciousness, if it's really guna karma, if it's really according to one's nature, if you can maintain it, sustain it, and as a result, you can engage nicely in Krishna consciousness.
Is it possible that at the moment, life as it is right now is good for you and it may get worse later and then you won't be able to have children and then you'll get frustrated? Because that's my concern, like right now I don't desire.
Therefore that's why I say one has to know one's conditioned nature.
How can someone know what's going to happen in the future?
What's going on? No.
Because
no.
I may not get this desire.
Sure, you can sit down.
I may never get this desire.
May or may not get the desire. You need to know yourself as to what type of person you are. Are you the type of person who flip-flops and who does one thing one time, something another time? ultimately, there's so many things that you don't know. He's your husband?
Yes.
But how do you know you won't get bored from him? What happens if you get bored of him in 5 years? That if it's too late, you already made a decision. So that's what decisions are. You may not know what happens in the future. For instance, you may decide that you want to have a child, but you don't know what it's like having a child. Right? You don't know what it's like. But once you decide, you can't decide, well, I'll change my mind. You can't change your mind. So that's part of life. You may never know what's in the future. You can study, you can hear from others, and so on. And then at a certain point, you have to make a decision. That's what decisions are. Decisions are black and white. They're not easy. But then you live with the consequences of your decision. Generally, I've never really seen any women. I've seen very many women go through this phase, but I've never seen anyone regret having children.
What if I get attached to the children and then...
You will get attached. It's not what if. You will get attached. You will get attached, and you will get attached. But that's what Krishna consciousness is meant to give you, the instruments to maintain a certain sense of balance. And even by going through that attachment, you'll also, it isn't that you get attached and everything's fun. You get attached and you go through a lot of pain and suffering as a consequence as well. Just like in Hungary, just now a few weeks ago, one devotee, she had her third baby, and after 3 months, the baby just suffocated in bed. So she was attached, but the result of the attachment wasn't just all happiness, it was pain. And that's what material life is. Sukha, dukkha, happiness and distress. But with Krishna consciousness, one digests these things, and gradually through the course of one's life, one comes to actually really just seeing samadarshana, seeing everyone equally. My friends, my relatives, a stranger, everyone, they're all the same. They're spirit souls. Someone else?
Is that attachment a problem? That attachment can be a serious problem in advancing in Krishna consciousness?
It has to be managed. It's like we're attached to our bodies right now. So it's a problem, but it's a fact. It's not something that we're just going to throw out the window. But when we balance that attachment to our body by engaging our bodies in Krishna's service, by chanting Hare Krishna, by purifying our hearts, then gradually we become more and more free from that attachment to our bodies. So similarly, now you're just talking about being attached to someone else's body as well, or being attached to some other bodies. And in the same way, if we try to cultivate the spiritual vision of who's in those bodies, there's some stranger that I call my children, because they are strangers. I don't know who they were. I didn't screen them before they came and decided they were going to be in my family. They're just like strangers who destiny arranged to pop into my life. But if I'm engaging them in Krishna's service, I'm teaching them how to be Krishna conscious, I'm focusing my life on that, then it's an attachment that becomes Krishnaized and decreases and becomes in time transformed. I'm seeing that person more as a devotee and less as some member of my family.
How can we chastise our children if we try to see them like devotees?
How can you chastise?
Chastise, yes, children.
Because they're devotees, but they're devotees who aren't trained and who aren't raised in the process. They don't know practical things, they don't know spiritual things, so you have to correct them. That's why being a parent is like being a guru. So just like a guru chastises disciple, parents chastises children. And then Prabhupada quotes that Chanaka Pandit says that children, especially when they get older, that the more you chastise them, the better it is for them. Children, disciples.
How old should they
be? At the age where they recognize that that's actually mercy, and that they recognize that it's good for them. When their intelligence is somewhat mature, when they're still not just on someone loves me, someone hates me, depending on what they tell me.
Who is at fault when you raise the child, and when he becomes older, he doesn't follow the path of...
That's up to him. That will be his choice. When it says Namo Chaita Samupetam Ritim, it means you're supposed to give him the opportunity to become liberated and that you've done everything. What he does with that is something else. But he's never going to be an ordinary person, even if he acts in an ordinary way. Ultimately, he'll be a devotee, he or she will be a devotee of some sorts in due course of time. So they may experiment with the material world, but when you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, then the truth of Krishna consciousness becomes a reality in their lives, and that they're never going to lose. They won't lose that. So they're always going to be devotees. And at a certain point when their lives sort of stabilize, then it'll come.
I have another question about diet. If somebody doesn't eat cooked meals, the raw, it's okay? If he offers all to Krishna, Krishna is offended because he doesn't cook the... It's about his health. He's doing his sadhana. He's going to Bhagavatam in the morning. He's doing well.
It's okay.
Like this.
It's okay.
It's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do it sometimes. Sometimes when eating cooked foods becomes too much, or when the weather is too warm. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Guru Maharaj, how can, for example, if a Grihastha couple have children, but in the place that where they are living, they are not having like Gurukula and proper schools to teach them, how should they be taught? Because the only schools that they are around are these karmic schools.
Then it's best to homeschool them. You can homeschool them.
For example, as far as I know, in here in Romania, if someone is homeschooled, then they won't allow them to write their final exams at the high school. And
you can, if you're connected to a school and you affiliate to a school, then they go and write in the school. You don't have to write. You don't have to go to the school, but you do your write your examinations in the school.
No, in Romania that's not working.
No.
There are umbrella schools outside of Romania. You have to say that you're studying abroad.
Uh-huh. So it has to be abroad.
Yes. So you basically declare that your child is studying abroad, so that's legal. And then you go to a system which is... except homeschooling, but that means that you have to do it in English. So he has to learn in English, so that's
trouble.
Yes, it's difficult.
It's better to do like this. My daughter is going to what?
To the school.
General school. It's better to do like this, homeschooling abroad and something like that.
Well, homeschooling abroad means it's they're at home. They're just
yes.
Registered abroad. Yeah, certainly, because children go to school, they're going to be hearing and seeing everything that all other children do, and that's what they're going to want to do.
But if she has association, lots of association with devotees,
maybe,
50,
but
50 life.
But it'll still put her in a certain situation of tension.
Yes.
There's going to be peer pressure from her friends, and there's going to be the association. So it's not just all one line. So it's inevitable that there's going to be some degree of interaction or some degree of effect that association will have on it. So the idea is that the community, the home, the school, it all gives the same message. If you give children two different messages, they get confused. So the idea is you give them the same message. And that's the ideal. I've seen devotees send their children to Karmi school, and the devotees come out, and the children come out good devotees. It requires a very, very good and very strong family relationship, and very good relationships at home to balance those, so that the children have a lot more faith in the parents, which is not always what's going on, than they do with friends, school, and so on. So just like this other girl that I brought from Hungary, Gaura Priya, she's 17, and she went to Gurukul in Krishna Valley until she was 8 years old, and then her parents moved to Ireland, and she went to Karmi school. And she's the only one in the family who chants 16 rounds, reads Prabhupada's books, goes to school, and she's the one who does everything. And in the summer, she comes and she works in the restaurant at the farm. She's very, very serious about being a devotee. So it can work, but it's taking more of a risk. It's more risky. It's more risky, and it's unfortunate that the system is like that in Romania. In some countries, there's absolutely no problem. In fact, in some countries, there's a huge wave of homeschooling. Because not only is it that you have a more controlled atmosphere, but the educational system is just bad. It's not even good in schools, for the most part. I was just speaking to one of the devotees involved in our school in Budapest, and they're working with someone who's in the education field, children's education field, and just on this whole concept, and they have, for instance, institute which is meant for children for homeschooling, and just the point there, amongst the many interesting things that this man is working, who spent his whole life in education, is that the children can be taught everything that they learn in school in at most one third of the time. Two-thirds of the stuff they learn is a complete waste of time. They're not so stupid. And but there's a whole system, and that system sort of perpetuates itself, but it's extremely inefficient. It's extremely inefficient. And of course, that's not a secret that karmis recognize, that the educational system is not good. You were going to ask something?
I also wanted to ask, so in this case, the wife practically has to stay at home all the time. It's not that she can go to job. Sometimes maybe they want also go to have a job. But I'm not sure should they go to job, or they just should stay at home with the children. And
well, if you're going to homeschool them, then it's a full-time job.
Yes. Because I've heard some, for example, in Ukraine, when last year we were to the festival and discussing with devotees, they said, okay, it's their duty to stay at home, but otherwise in other countries they are going and having a career and having a job.
Yeah, but what about the kids? What about giving kids Krishna consciousness? So if you don't do the best, then you're entangled in sinful reaction. That's not what they're for. It's just to find their own way in the material world. You're supposed to give them the best facility. And of course everything comes along with sacrifice. So you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice your career. That is the career. That is a career, raising children. Why is it better to, you know, plug away at a computer? That's better than raising children or doing who knows what. That's a real career, taking care of children. It's somehow or another being made to seem like it's something that's not important or denigrating, that we're taking away women's right for equality if they can't work in some, I don't know, horrible factory or business or office or something like that, and instead they become managers of a home, and that they take care of their children. So that's some kind of something lower. It's a real real psychological game that modern society plays on getting more and more consumers and more people to be engaged and employed in a consumer-oriented society. And children just become commodities. And, of course, the children aren't being promoted as viable commodities either, because of contraception and so many other things. So our European society is imploding. It's not socially, you're not going to be able to maintain, because if you only have one child, then there's no feasible social structure where you're going to be able to retire, and the employment and work of that one child is going to maintain two parents. Or when your child marries someone else's single child, then two children, aside from maintaining themselves and their family, they're maintaining also four other adults in a very expensive welfare system and healthcare system. Because the government's retirement plan, retirement system, that's also imploding. And the reason for that is because of birth control. Because unless you have about three children per family, you can't perpetuate the system where children take care of parents. And the state is just made up of workers, so they can only provide as much as they can provide. So that's why gradually, for instance, for those religions, generally it's religions who, like for instance Muslims, say have as many children as possible, they're naturally in a demographic system, they're becoming more and more populous, which is not necessarily a problem, but the problem is that the population of Europe is decreasing. It has a negative growth. So whereas 50 years ago, you had, for every retired person, you had like six employed people, now you've got three. It doesn't work. Why? Because you've got so few children. And why? Because children are an economic burden. They're not an economic burden, they're the ones who maintain everything. And if you don't invest in them, then society can't maintain itself. And then if you can't maintain old people, what do? Then euthanasia, then you kill them. Because it's impractical to maintain them. They talk about it. And sooner or later they're going to do it. 100 years ago they talked about abortion. It was inconceivable. Now it's just, everyone does it. because when we dream up of all kinds of social standards and we don't go according to the laws that's given to us by Krishna or given by nature, which is Krishna's laws, then it doesn't work. Maybe in the short term it does, but in the long run it won't. So just like you can exploit the earth and you can have an industrial revolution for 60, 70 years, but once the North Pole and South Pole melt, then the industrial revolution's over and everyone's living underwater. Or at least who's left, they live underwater. So it doesn't last. Why? Because that's not the way people are supposed to be doing business. So when you go against the laws of God, then Krishna says in the Gita, and they engage in all kinds of horrible works meant to destroy the world.
I also wanted to ask, sometimes we hear this argument that it's better not to engage, for example, in Grihastha Ashram because your sadhana will decrease, your capacity of preaching will decrease both to the Prabhus and Mataji. But also we see that Grihastha Ashram is in Shastra and Srila Prabhupada was in Grihastha life. How can we balance these two views, arguments?
Well, but the thing is, if you don't become a Grihastha, then your preaching and your spiritual life will decrease also. In other words, if you're always thinking about those things, and you at least don't engage in it in a positively restrictive way, then you'll fall down and you'll do it in an unrestrictive way, which will be negative. The Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're something else. So we can't imitate what they were doing. But you can't artificially. So artificially trying to deny the senses, that doesn't work either. So better, and Krishna says that in this third chapter, he says better that someone engage in restricted sense engagement than deny one's senses. Engagement in sense objects, and we always be thinking about sense gratification. Mritya chaya suchate, and then it's just a cheater. So then that's cheating. So the only reason one should not get married is because actually they're detached and they're brahmacharis. Otherwise, to be always thinking about members of the opposite sex and should I and shouldn't I, and so then that's not good. It's not progressive.
I want to ask, what does homeschooling mean? Like, what are the children teaching? Are they learning regular stuff that the other children are also learning?
Yeah.
And their jobs will be like the other students?
What their jobs will be, that's something else, but there's a legal, a minimum legal curriculum that you have to teach them, that they have to learn, that has to meet some kind of national standards, and that they have to be taught, and they have to be taught at home. But and of course that means that the parents have to learn how to become teachers.
And the parents will teach them, or they will hire like a professor?
You can hire also.
Yeah.
You can also hire. If you have the resources, then you can hire someone also. Sure. What was the other thing that you asked? Anyway, they learn what they have to learn, although Prabhupada was, oh yes, and then you said, and then are they, then they're going to get a job and work like, that's going to be up to them. That wasn't Prabhupada's view of what children should necessarily do.
Because if they get a regular job, they will won't fit in because they're very different from the others. They don't know what the others know. Or the parents should teach them how regular life is outside of
I mean, you know, if someone's living here, it's not that they're isolated from what's going on in the outside world. But once again, they're being in a restricted way introduced to what's happening in the outside world. Not that it's unrestricted, unsupervised, but they're actually being systematically shown how the other side lives. And not that they're being dragged in to that, and then Krishna conscious life becomes the other side.
It's okay to tell them always that what others, karmis do is bad. It's okay to always tell them it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. Smoking is bad.
You have to educate them. That's what education is. And education ultimately means that someone recognizes what's good and what's bad.
But always to tell them.
There's not so many things to tell them. You tell them meat eating and illicit sex and television and so on. In other words, to paint a picture, to understand what is good and what is bad. We're training them. So education is a constant thing. But how you educate them, that has to be, that's an art. So education from, you know, their little, just do this, do that, do this, do that. So when they're going to school, in a very subtle and a very expert way, they're constantly saying, they're constantly learning, be bad, be bad, be bad. That's what education means. It's not said in the same words, but that's what they're hearing all the time. Television is good, what you see on television is good, the violence is good, the music is good, the musicians are good, all of this, all of those things that are actually bad is actually good. Wearing no clothes is good, and so many other things. And that's the system. So that's one part of the system, education, and the other part is that when they actually then become adults, how will they live, how will they work? So Bhagavatam begins by saying that we're starting a revolution. So what does it mean, a revolution? A revolution means you change the lifestyle. So we don't necessarily want children to just, that everyone's just fitting in to the existing social economic structure. For one, the social economic structure is not going to continue. If you look at history, it falls apart every 50, 60 years. So just to think that it's going to continue on ad infinitum the way it's going now is illusion. It's materially not something that even materialistic people don't believe in. And of course, what does Krishna also says? Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. It'll fall apart. Dukaryam, ashashvatam. That's what the material world is all about. So, training children to become another brick in the wall of materialistic society is not necessarily what we want them to do. If they can be very successful in the material world, and by that they can really further the cause of Krishna consciousness, then that's valuable. Otherwise, what we need is people who preach. We need people who give their lives for spreading Krishna consciousness. Businesses don't have a good track record. There's a sort of this illusion that it's stable and secure. Businesses are not stable and secure. Even states are not stable and secure. What's been the business that's been around for 2,000 years and keeps going strong? Catholic Church. And if you see religions, wars come and go, states come and go, economic collapse comes and goes. They continue. Religions continue. Why? because whatever they may be, they're doing God's work, and ultimately Krishna reciprocates for that. It's the best business. IBM is going to collapse, so is everyone else. So is iPhone, and they're all going to be just stories in the past, just like so many other businesses have been. And Syria is a failed state, and Iraq is a failed state, and Somalia is a failed state. And what one time Europe became a failed state, and it may become a failed state again. And everything that people had just wiped off and disappeared. Once this was Hungary, now it's called Romania. And sometime in the future it may be called Hungary again. If our Prime Minister has anything to say about it. And people just, the Russians came and they just took everything away. You've got your business, you don't have a business anymore. It's all owned by the state now. You have nothing. You want a job? We'll give you a job. Maybe. And that's what happened. And before them, it was the Nazis. And they came, and if they didn't like the color of your skin, if you're a gypsy, if you're a Roma, if you're a Jew, then we kill you. We don't even give you a job. So, if you look at history, and if you look at Bhagavad Gita, there's no such thing as security. So better, actually, we teach our children how to deal with the insecurity of material existence and how to really be survivors, and ultimately how they can be Krishna conscious.
Why neophyte devotees, when they come to bhakti, they became afraid of death? It's talking about death a lot in philosophy, and they became much more afraid.
Well, I don't know. It's not something that I've experienced, but if you experience that, it's more because they've recognized the fact that people die. Whereas before, everyone's living as if they're going to live forever, and that they don't really recognize that they're going to die. But then, of course, if we become a little more Krishna conscious, we realize that no one dies, it's just the body that dies. In fact, even the body doesn't die. The body's already dead. So there is no death.
I experienced this in my daughter. She's more afraid of death now. When she always hears about this philosophy, and when we drive or in the plane, she's more afraid.
Anyway, it requires education, and the more that we educate, there are consequences of our education. Education gives knowledge, and sometimes when you get knowledge, then you have a certain level of fear, but ultimately fear goes away when one becomes free from bodily identity. So bhaya dvitiya abhinivesha. So bhaya, fear, comes from bodily identification. The more we become free from bodily identity, the more that we actually become fearless.
So I wanted to ask that you were speaking about the idea that the church is for 2,000 years, so it's a good business to be in. And I was thinking that the children are, I mean, we usually work, and besides working, we do our, which is, we have a role in the society, and besides that, we do preaching. And I was thinking that somehow, I mean, in order to create a society or to Krishna consciousness society, wouldn't we need all those roles in the society? I mean, besides preachers, where everyone should preach, but they should also have roles of doctors, engineers, whatever other kinds of...
Some roles. Prabhupada didn't start off with doctors or engineers, but rather he started off with farmers. Because those are the people you really need. Because they're the ones who you depend on. So engineers we don't depend on, doctors to a certain degree, but the real basis of life is eating. So that's why Prabhupada wanted those farming communities, and specifically he wanted then devotees and subsequent generations to become very expert in cow protection, farming, gardening, and the things that are involved in that type of social structure, which was the social structure 100 years ago. That's the way it was all over the world. This is not something revolutionary. This is revolutionary. This type of city life, moving into Radhanath, you know, who's a historian, told me that up until First World War, for instance, in the cities in Hungary, no one owned property. There was no such thing as ownership. And of course, the same thing happened in the country. Everything belonged to landlords, and you inherited, and you worked, and you gave a certain percentage. There was no such thing as private property. Private property is something that happened in the last 100 years. It wasn't private property before. It was always belonged to the state. But anyway, Prabhupada's view is that a society should be an agrarian society. And then when that agrarian society is very stable, then you may need, like how many engineers do devotees need? How many engineers do you need? You certainly need engineers if you're going to continue building houses. Although, to be honest, you don't technically need engineers. I've seen many carpenters and masons and so on who know a lot more about just building these type of houses than engineers do. You don't need an engineer to build a house like this. But those then become very minimal. And doctors, and yeah, but how many doctors do you need to deal with devotees? I have doctor disciples, those who are, for instance, GPs, general practitioners. They usually deal with 2,000 patients, minimum of 2,000 patients each. So that means that for every 2,000 devotees, you need a doctor. It isn't that every fifth devotee has to be a doctor, or every 100th devotee has to be a doctor. So yeah, it's just a question of where you start. When we start with this system, where no one's feeding anybody, where 1% or 2% of the people are actually engaged in the real basics of life, namely feeding, clothing, and or you reverse the other, where everyone is more or less living that type of lifestyle. And that was our lifestyle prior to this consumer society. It's consumerism that changes it. When you're no longer working for things that are essential, but you're working for things that are completely unnecessary. And then if you look around your house and see what are the things that I really, really need, and what are the things that are just completely superfluous. So in the past, people for centuries and millennia lived by what they really needed. And then life becomes very simple. Then that's why there's this big garden over here, because whoever lived here, they lived off this garden. They didn't go into any shop. They lived off this garden, and they had chickens here and animals, and more or less that was it. Once you have a house and you've got a garden, you don't need to do anything else. So why do you need education, and why do you need a job?
What about
about those persons working on this style of farming and that life is not suitable? Like, they don't like it, they don't feel comfortable around the farm and doing gardening and so on.
Do they feel comfortable eating?
Yes.
Well, when they have nothing to eat, they'll be very comfortable around farms. If they have no alternative, they'll feel very comfortable. We had the mayor in the village in where our farm is. He died. But he was a very nice man. He was the first mayor. And he said that during Second World War, people from Budapest, they would come to the villages, they would come with money to buy food. And the villagers would say, eat your money. Eat the paper. Eat your telephone. Eat your car. You can't eat those things. But you certainly can eat, it's a matter of how people were also raised. So not that everyone has to do that, but the balance now is completely disproportionate. 2-3%, maybe 5% of people, unless you go to very, very highly agricultural countries like India, where maybe it's still like 30%, 40%, but not for long, because all of those people are just streaming into the cities and living in slums just to get a job in some factory or some business, because they think that that's progress. Why? Because that's what they're being taught in schools. Until there was school, they were happy to work on the farm, and they didn't have to learn anything in order to actually work the land. They just learned that from their parents. But when they went to school, then they realized that actually they had to learn how to become engineers and architects to make telephones and mobile phones and program computers and so many other things. And then they all headed out of the farms and heading off to the cities. So there were cities in Krishna's time, but when you read what the cities were like, there's no mention of factories, there's no mention, they're like big, big venues where landowners, very wealthy, the king used to live, and they were more like parks than anything else. It doesn't say that they were actually industrial centers. They weren't designed for industry, although they were designed for trade. They were trade centers. But they were very big cities. But they weren't many. So when Lord Ramachandra goes from Ayodhya all the way south, he doesn't go across any, there's no cities being mentioned. There were, but it's not the population swing that it is now, and which is increasing more and more. You know, they just keep saying how as time goes on, more and more, and ultimately 90% of the people are going to be living in cities, I mean in big cities, and cities are going to be huge monstrosities. Like I go to Istanbul, because we have a center there. There's 18 million people in Istanbul. It's very, very fearsome. It's not a nice city. I mean, it's very impressive. But 18 million people is...
something without having that stability.
You can do anything as long as the perspective is real, which is that there's no such thing as stability. Stability doesn't exist in this material world. So what happens over the next 5 years or 10 years? But there's no question of attaining, really having stability. What we need to do is, there's no harm in either of those things. Either someone wants to rent or someone wants to have a house. We take advantage of the circumstances around us. But what really measures things is how Krishna conscious we are by those arrangements. And how well we can actually assist in spreading Lord Chaitanya's mission. Then everything's okay. But we always keep a very realistic view of things. So Prabhupada, for instance, gives the example of the snake and the mouse. The mouse digs a hole, the snake goes in the hole, eats the mouse and lives in the hole. So similarly, yes, we may be living and working in this environment, but we should have a very clear perspective of what this environment is. We should never really expect that there's going to be any sense of security, stability. Just expect the worst at any moment, because it's most likely going to happen, because that's what the material world is all about. But in the meantime, we have a very positive outlook from the spiritual point of view, because by practicing Krishna consciousness, we're going back to Godhead, and we have something of real value. We have a real asset. We have something of inestimable value, which is Krishna consciousness. So as long as that perspective is there, and then, yeah, let's use what the materialistic people are building in the meantime in Krishna's service. So that becomes the real thing. Are we actually doing that? So if devotees, for instance, are living in a city, and the result of living in a city is that they're just working 12 hours a day and have barely enough time to go to sleep and take care of their families, then it's really questionable what's the use of it. Because you can do the same thing living in the country. But if you're living in the city and you're doing very creative preaching, or you're making a lot of money to spread Krishna consciousness, then that's like the snake and the mouse. Then it's worthwhile. But to struggle for life under these conditions, where you can't walk out at night because you don't know whether you're going to be killed or raped, you can't drink the water, you can't breathe the air, you're stuck in traffic for 2 hours just to get 5 kilometers. It's not worth going under those types of circumstances just to eat. Because you can eat under any circumstance. But if you can really make a success, and if it can be very valuable contribution from the point of Krishna consciousness, your own Krishna consciousness, and also for spreading the mission, then yes, then it's a value.
Why in some countries the community of devotees is big and in other countries is small?
It's due to people or the vision they have or circumstances and so on. But if a community is small, and things change. We're in the material world, so big or small, important thing is that there is actually a real community, and community really means to have things in common. And if it's small now, then it'll get big. And if it's big, then it'll get bigger or it'll get small. Just like when Chanakya Pandit, not Chanakya Pandit, Birbal. Birbal went to Tehran to meet the Shah of Iran. And the Shah of Iran asked him to glorify him, and he called him, he was like the full moon in the sky. So when he got back to Agra, Akbar, he already had heard about this. He said, you're glorifying my enemy and you're saying he's a full moon in the sky. He says, then if I tell you to glorify me, what will you say? He says, then I will say that you're a waxing moon. Says Akbar got very upset. He says, he's a full moon and I'm a waxing moon. He's more than I am. He says, he's more than you, but there's only one way he can go, and he can only just wane. He can only get less, but you can only grow and grow. So if you're a small community, you can only grow. He was very smart. He was clever. He was very clever. Birbal. And he was a devotee. He bought Akbar to Gokula for Janmashtami like 3 times in a row. And so if you you take that type of role, you mix with those type of devotees, if you really have some influence, and you can bring about some type of change in society. So therefore, ultimately, whether we're here or there, the real measure is what we can really do to make a success of Krishna consciousness personally, ourselves, and for the benefit of other people. And ultimately, when you do that, then those things can bridge over or gap over all these other sociological and economic considerations. Because on the other hand, we don't want everyone living out in the country being a Maya. So that they're eating and they're living simply, but there's no high thinking. So Prabhupada wanted the high thinking as well, not just the simple living. But you see that that's how the tendency for high thinking will be more when they're living like that. That's why in the little villages, 2-3 churches in every village, isn't it? As many religions as there are, everyone's got a church. And that used to be the social center, the spiritual center, everything happened around those churches. And that was all over the world like that. Anything else? What do you usually do at this time? Devotees take prasadam and then they chant or go?
We are cleaning and then we are going.
Okay.
It's almost 7.
We have Ishtagosti usually Sunday evening.
Uh-huh.
Every second week.
You have Ishtagosti today?
No.
Okay, so maybe I should let you clean up, and I will also do some things, and otherwise we'll be here for morning program, evening program, tomorrow, day after. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
John.